All the Tones of a Farewell, Part 1.
How long has this story been going on?
For almost 3 years.
3 years? So it started right away?
Yes, almost immediately.
I can't believe it. I really can't believe it. Tell me I'm dreaming.
Don't put your hands on me, please. There's the baby.
You are crazy? Do you think I can beat you?
Any man can become violent at certain times.
Antonia, I still belong to that generation of idiots who believe that a woman shouldn't even be touched with a flower.
I distrust men.
Me too?
I distrust everyone.
You don't know me at all.
You don't know me either.
I see.
Have you ever wondered who I am?
1,000 times, Antonia. But apparently I haven't found the answer. I've always known that you're a difficult woman, but I believed you were honest. What happened to that woman?
Michael, sorry, I don't feel like talking now. I just want to vanish from here.
You're right, I would like to hit you, but I won't. And not because the child is there. I'd rather hit my brother. I can't believe he lied to me all this time. I mean, we were sitting together at the table, he passed me the salt, I poured him the wine, we chatted about this and that, we played tennis, we had diving competitions in the pool, descents in the mountains, we stopped to eat a sandwich at the refuge, and in the meantime he thought about the fuck he had just had with my girlfriend. What a bastard.
Don't hate him, please. He suffered too, and a lot.
I want to hate him, but I can't. I carried him as a child. I was so proud of my little blonde brother, damn it.
I know, Michael.
I had noticed for a while that he was ill, but I never imagined that you were the cause. Although, to be honest, I noticed something strange. But how could I think that you were so false, so incredibly lying to me? How could you not tell me anything?
I didn't want to lose you, Michael. I wanted to be with you, not with him.
You wanted to be with me and fuck with him?
I know, it's hard to understand.
A little more than hard, if you allow me. Maybe try to explain it to me, huh?
I was sinking in quicksand. You were the only thing that remained still in my life. I tried hard, believe me. I removed the thought I hoped to heal.
Heal?
Yes, heal.
You are right. In fact, you must be sick. There is no other explanation. He had just turned 16 when you met him. 16, Antonia.
I'm sicker than you might think. All the more reason to let me go.
I mean, let me understand. You wanted to be with me even if it meant lying every day?
Yes, Michael, exactly. It was the price I had to pay to be with you.
And now suddenly you don't want to be with me anymore? What has changed? What is it I don't understand, Antonia? I'm the one who should be angry. But it's not me who's sending you away. It's you who's leaving.
It's changed that Emmanuel is gone.
So what?
Don't you understand? I suffered like crazy. I felt terrible and had to pretend with you and everyone else. I could not do it anymore. I have to end everything and start again. I know I will be alone, and I also know that it will be difficult, but I finally feel like I can breathe away from you.
You know, right, that these words hurt me a lot. I have always tried to make you happy. I really did my best.
You have nothing to blame yourself. The problem is me, not you.
And what will you do now?
I'll manage somehow, don't worry. I'm going now, Michael.
Wait, Antonia. Sit down. Don't rush things. Give me time to reflect. Maybe there is a solution, and it's quite simple too.
What solution?
We will make others believe that the child is mine. Only the two of us will know the truth. In time I will be able to accept it. After all, he is my brother's son, not a stranger's. It will be easy for me to love him. In fact, I already do.
You really don't understand, do you? I couldn't bear to see Emmanuel again, let alone hide the truth about his son from him. If I stayed with you, I would be forced to do it.
Why don't you want to see him again?
Are you kidding me, or do you really not understand?
No, I'm asking you seriously.
But how can you not understand? It's clear that you've never truly been in love. There is nothing worse than being forced to see someone you are in love with without being able to be with him. It is constant torture. And then with a child of his own, who will probably look a lot like him. Do you think he wouldn't guess the truth?
Maybe you're right. Or maybe not. The fact is that you are cutting him off from everything. You don't even want to tell him that the child is his. And this is absurd, as well as unfair.
Telling him the truth about the child would be doubly unfair. I couldn't be with him in any case, and I would compromise his relationship with Ariana. The truth is that I can't live with him or without him.
Who was he, Catullus?
Ovid.
But why do you say you can't be with him? There's nothing impossible when you're in love, at least I think. Maybe I've never been in love, who knows? Or maybe yes, I've never told you everything about myself, I've had a past too. But that's not the point, Antonia. The point is that you're not telling me the whole truth, you're not convincing me.
You're right, it's not the whole truth.
So tell me, after a blow like this there's nothing left that can scare me.
There's no point in talking about it, since I have to leave. And then now that the baby is here, I can't think of anything else. I feel the need to hide in a den. I think it's a natural instinct. I have to protect him, you know?
Yes, I understand this very well.
The mere idea of seeing your parents again in these conditions drives me crazy. I hoped with all my heart that you could save me, but it didn't work. Thanks anyway, Michael. Thanks for trying.
You're doing everything wrong, Antonia. It's right now that it could work between us. Before it couldn't, because our relationship was based on fiction and lies. But now you've told me the truth, or at least part of the truth, even if...
These are useless conversations now. Let me go, please.
I'm not holding you back.
You're sitting on top of my suitcase.
What an idiot.
You are not an idiot at all.
Of course I am. I never noticed anything. Always too busy thinking about practical things. Work, taxes, the villa, our new house.
It's your character and it's one of the most positive sides of your personality.
Yes, of course. It must be because of the positive aspects of my character that you betrayed me. There was never a single minute in which you were sincere with me. You fucked with me and to avoid getting bored you thought about someone else. Maybe more than one. Who knows? I can't even keep the memories, Antonia. It was all fake, all an act. You destroyed everything. Everything.
Michael, at the moment I am not able to stand a trial. I have already tried and condemned myself. I'm leaving. I renounce everything. I don't want anything from you. What else should I do?
Try to put yourself in my shoes. I'm still in shock. Don't expect me to reason coldly. Give me a moment.
In the end, if you think about it, that's right. I'm not one of you. I tried, you know, but I wasn't up to it. I have always been the last wheel of the wagon, less elegant, less beautiful, less everything. I felt constantly under scrutiny with my homemade hair dye, my ordinary hands, my small breasts, my imitation Bourbonnaise handbag, my random brand shoes, my university studies that no one cares about. You can't imagine how humiliated I have felt all these years.
Humiliated?
Yes, humiliated. I want to return to my world, among ordinary people, live in an ordinary house, find a job as an ordinary person, without having to account to anyone for my failures and my mediocrity. I wasn't the right woman for you, you always knew it.
You were, or rather you are. Exactly the woman I chose for myself. I have never wanted anything different from what you are, even if you are very confusing and have made some big mess. Here, dry your eyes.
I'm not crying.
Yes, you are crying. Come on, come here. A kiss on the nose and everything goes away. It's wet. It looks like a dog's.
Don't make me laugh. Now is not the time.
It's always time to laugh. And now what do you plan to do with the baby?
What questions are you asking me? I wouldn't give him up for anything in the world.
That's what I was hoping to hear. But what will we tell my parents?
Anything, just leave Emmanuel out of it.
What if he doesn't want to be left out?
He must stay out of it. he will never know that the child is his. Now he's happy with that girl, he doesn't have to know anything about it. I forbid you to talk to him about it, Michael. I would never forgive you.
You're crazy. Do you realize that you are losing everything for him?
Of course, I realize that.
But where are you going to stay?
I'm going to stay at my mom's house, at least for the first few months. She's a good woman, she'll get a little angry, but then she'll understand. Now I'm really going, Michael.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Your looks are
soundtrack number 1. Passacaglia in C minor BWV 582 by Bach. The lit fireplace casts reddish glows on her, who is sweetly laughing, puts back with her hand a lock that has escaped her hairstyle. In front of her the statuesque profile, the raven hair, the winter pallor, the severe eyebrows, and the sensual mouth of Frederick. He stares into space as always. He is, as always, bored and serene, alone on top of a mountain. He looks around from up there and gets bored. He's always bored. He's a habitué of boredom. Who knows what he thinks as he stares into the air from the top of the mountain. Perhaps childhood dirges, sense of Christmas fir trees, memories of a virginity lost during some journey back to life. Perhaps he simply listens to the air like an ascetic in prayer, wondering how many centuries he has continued to see the same sun always rise, to always cross the same desert, to always be reborn with his eyes open, realizing from the first glance that no, nothing has changed. Antonia avoids looking at him, but her mind doesn't stop for a moment caressing him obscenely. She can't help but say yes, let him indulge his Flemish painter's imagination in bed, respect his need for solitude after love, when in white underwear he opens the window to let in the frost, and says to himself, the sunrise is beautiful. Standing in front of the sun, he ties his silk tie and prepares for the only prayer he is capable of, the obsessive declination of horror vacui. He compulsively piles up in her words so as not to leave free spaces in which, inevitably, think about death. He recites profane litanies, listing with religious scruple nouns, adjectives, verbal predicates, passages from encyclopedias, medicine leaflets, recipe ingredients, the catalog of the Trojan ships, the IKEA autumn winter catalog, Renzo's vegetable garden, the titles of the imaginary library of St. Victor, the great genealogy of the Cetites, the descendants of Cain. Objective descriptions of things, people, animals, vegetables read in specialist magazines and memorized like a mantra. Antonia turns and smiles at Michael. My brother is stupid, he doesn't deserve better. He doesn't see beneath her gray cat gaze. He doesn't see the snake's pupils. He doesn't know that she can't love him. She can't love anyone. Antonia is sterile, she is sterile in her soul. I too let myself be deceived a few centuries ago. And sometimes the dawn, rising, still surprises me in bed with a mass of pain on my sternum. I would like to have her back here for a moment, just a moment, the time of a kiss. The hand to cleanse the lips. Spit away the contagion. I think she would appreciate the quote.
all the tones of a farewell too, of the uselessness of talking about love.
Antonia, think again. You are alone, you have no friends. If you had at least one friend you could count on, I would worry less.
I have a great friend, my mother.
Luckily, Antonia. But what's wrong with you? You're staggering and very pale. In your state, you shouldn't get so worked up. Do you want me to take your blood pressure?
No thanks, I'm fine.
Sit down here. You can't drive in this state.
Only half an hour, though.
Yes, certainly. I'll sit down, too, if you don't mind. I'm a bit shaken.
You'll feel better when I'm gone.
I doubt it. Rest, stretch your legs. You have to keep your feet up. I'll put a pillow for you, like this. You better?
Yes, thank you.
Do you want to tell me a little about yourself? There are many things I don't know about your past, and that I would like to understand before you go.
I don't want to talk about my past.
I don't mean the recent past. I wanted to ask you about when you were a little girl, before we met.
What do you want to know?
There's one thing I've always wondered. Why don't you have any friends? All girls have some.
I have a very introverted character. They hurt me. It's like a barrier has gone up somewhere in my soul.
Why didn't you ever tell me about it?
Because you never asked me. And then I don't like to talk about it. There were several unpleasant incidents that I never told anyone about.
Try telling me one, if you feel like it. You want?
One of my best friends, in high school, took my first boyfriend away from me. A relationship that only lasted a year, but which was very important to me. I was 15. I confided in my classmate. She consoled me and kept my spirits up. We also went on holiday together, to a very nice place in eastern Liguria, where her parents had a house. I suffered, but as a normal teenager can suffer, who knows, she can count on her family affection. I had a very close bond with my father, and this gave me all the strength I needed. I was only 18 when he died. For me, it was a catastrophe. Immediately after my father's death, that girl wrote me a letter to inform me that she had always made fun of me, and that she had had fun behind my back with our classmates. She told me that she had taken part in a bet. That boy had bet a sandwich that he would be able to seduce me within a month. She bet against me and won.
A sandwich?
Yes, a sandwich.
But what's the point of writing something like that in those circumstances?
She said she had done it to apologize and take some weight off her conscience.
What a bitch. No sane person hurts someone who is sick to apologize to her. She was a horrible person, your classmate. She was probably dying of envy. You were probably prettier than her but very childish, an ideal target for bad people. I imagine you with braids and short stockings.
You too?
Why, who else imagines you like this?
Your brother.
Good blood doesn't lie.
However, I was just like that, dressed and combed like a little girl, with braids or hair held back by crocheted headbands made by my mother, a pathetic thing to think about, and I also wore braces. I was ridiculous. I should have known that all that interest from the cutest boy in class couldn't have been sincere.
Why not? I liked you straight away.
It's not true, Michael. Maybe you forgot that you initially left me in the lurch after a few weeks.
I hadn't yet understood how important you were to me. It was precisely by being away from you that I understood it.
You may have understood it, but I didn't. I really don't know what you saw special in me. You could have half of female Turin at your feet. Why me? Just any girl?
Maybe because you're not just any girl. Go on.
Another time, at a party, while we were drinking a cocktail, a friend of mine said to me in front of everyone, "Why don't you decide to get your breasts redone? You're as flat as an ironing board." And to think that I had worn a new dress and thought I looked particularly pretty. But why are you laughing?
You had a collection of girlfriends from Barnum's Circus, Antonia. However, that girl was stupid, as well as a rude person. You have always been very pretty precisely because you are inconspicuous. Redheads, if they wear a lot of makeup and try to attract attention, immediately become vulgar. While you are refined, you have a natural elegance.
I'm fond of you, Michael.
But you never loved me.
I thought I loved you before I fell in love.
With Emmanuel, obviously.
Yes. I had never loved anyone like this.
Does he love you?
I do not know. A lot of nonsense is said about love. This is one of the very few things I learned from this matter. The sauce of history, to quote Manzoni.
The two of us have never talked about love. We have always taken it for granted that our relationship was fine as it was. It was a mistake.
I too thought that it could work like this, that it was enough to let yourself live, but that's not true. As soon as you lower your guard, the fist comes right in your face. Be careful, Michael, I tell you with all my love. Sooner or later, it will happen to you too.
I don't think so. I'm not saying this out of presumption, but because I know myself well enough.
No one knows himself well enough before he has tested himself. I don't wish you to live such an experience, but until you have lived it, don't judge what you don't know.
Why don't you try to explain it to me? Maybe I understand anyway.
No, believe me. These are things you don't understand before you've tried them. Being in love is a pathological condition because it is the disease itself that becomes indispensable for you to live, like drugs. The more the disease worsens, the happier you are. If you try to do without it, you go into withdrawal and suffer terribly. It's like dancing on the edge of a cliff while under the influence of a hallucinogenic substance.
You're right. Maybe I've never been in love. Something like this horrifies me just thinking about it.
Michael, one crazy person in the family is enough.
You and my brother would be an absurd couple, but perhaps, thinking with a cool head, you are made for each other. Now I'll tell you something that will make me sound crazy too. I would have preferred to see you together rather than lose you completely, Antonia.
I couldn't do it, Michael.
To do what?
To accept being destroyed, I ran away.
Why destroyed?
How can I explain it to you? Loving your brother is like watching a supernova explode. You know it will kill you, but you can't help but be amazed to watch the spectacle. It releases tremendous energy. One moment before being incinerated, you are grateful for existing. The next moment, you are dead.
I knew I had a rather peculiar little brother, but you're describing him to me as an atomic bomb. I'm not surprised he fell in love with you. You're the only one in the world who sees him that way.
I see him this way because he is this way.
I understand. I, on the other hand, don't explode or disintegrate, so you didn't find anything special in me. Right?
Don't be unfair. I really loved you. I was overwhelmed by something bigger than me. I couldn't defend myself.
And to think, I thought yours was more of a sex story than anything else.
But no, what nonsense. Sex is just a consequence. It's impossible to love someone so much and not be physically attracted to him as well. But Emmanuel doesn't need sex to destroy. For months, he demanded that we observe the most absolute chastity.
Seriously?
Yes, seriously.
And why?
To prove that we are souls. Your brother can have uncommon strength if he decides it's worth it.
A bit like running barefoot on rusty nails because your soul doesn't get tetanus anyway. There's something medieval about it all. It reminds me of flagellating monks and the Black Death. My brother was born in the wrong era. However, I understand less and less. If he loves you so much, why did you leave him?
Michael, I don't know how to tell you. You wouldn't believe me.
If it's the truth, I'll believe you.
Your brother asked me to marry him.
Really?
Really. I feel bad just thinking about it.
This changes things, Antonia, and quite a bit. You have to give me time to metabolize.
Metabolize what? It was madness.
Antonia, forgive my accountant mentality, but the math doesn't add up to me. You say you suffered like a dog for missing him. You say you're leaving because you can't bear to see him again without being with him, but you rejected his proposal of marriage. What is it I'm missing?
It's useless. You just can't understand.
Try to make me understand.
It's so obvious that it seems incredible to me to have to explain it to you, and you also make me feel humiliated.
Excuse me? Unfortunately, it is necessary.
Your brother is a little out of his mind, Michael. There is a seed of madness in him, of absurd exaltation. He is a visionary, a mystic. he alternates moments of unbridled delirium of the senses with ascetic phases worthy of a cloistered monk. This is precisely why I loved him with all of myself, but I was always afraid of him.
A little out of his mind, you say? Who knows what madness is, Antonia? Perhaps he is saner than us. In any case, madness united you, since you loved him for it. What were you afraid of? You could be crazy together.
I see you still don't understand.
What should I understand?
Yet it is so simple. I am a normal, if not mediocre, 32-year-old woman of modest social background. He is a rich and beautiful 18-year-old boy, out of the norm in every way. I'm attracted to madness, but I'm not completely insane, Michael. I realized what would have happened if I had complied with his crazy proposal. I would have felt ashamed of myself in every single moment of my life. I would have continually felt uncomfortable, old, ugly, insignificant, out of place, out of role, so stupid and presumptuous as not to understand that I would make a fool of myself. And sooner or later he would throw me away like an old shoe. I already felt this way with you, let alone with him. I would have died of shame and pain.
You are not at all mediocre and insignificant. But I understand your point of view.
No, you don't understand at all. I would have accepted any role to continue having him by my side. You can't even imagine how I felt that day. He offered me the only impossible role, the only one that cut me off from everything. I understood that it was over, that I had lost him forever, that nothing would be possible anymore. Nothing. I thought I was dying of pain.
Antonia, my brother is strange. He doesn't care what others think. I'm sure he would have done his best to keep his commitment.
But why do you torment me, Michael? There's no point in talking about it now. And then, thank God, I don't suffer anymore. I have his baby. I don't need anything else.
And he?
He will suffer a little, but then he will start his life again, as is natural. At his age, you quickly forget.
It depends, Antonia. Sometimes you don't forget at all.
If Ariana is as you describe her to me, it won't take long to get him back on his feet.
On the other hand, I think he will give that poor girl a lot of trouble. I don't see how a balanced and normal person can cope with someone like him.
Which means I'm unbalanced and abnormal?
You're not so normal, Antonia. Otherwise you wouldn't have accepted such absurd deals, cheating on me, staying with him with or without sex, harming yourself needlessly, reaching the point of a nervous breakdown, even pregnant with him, for the sole pleasure of losing everything you had conquered, including the person you sacrifice yourself for. If all this seems normal to you, you have some serious masochism problems.
I don't know if she will make it, but I didn't make it either. I wanted to live, despite everything.
Normal survival instinct.
I was hoping you could save me.
You miscalculated, at least judging by how things turned out.
I know, but I couldn't have known it then.
However, I can still help you if you want. You don't run any risks with me. You will heal, it's just a matter of time. Maybe I don't know how to love in the strict sense of the term, but I know how to care for someone. Affection doesn't go away. It's not like falling in love. It is stable and resists storms.
For 9,000 years.
Why 9,000?
Anyway, no.
No what?
I don't think I can heal, Michael, not now or ever. In fact, I don't want to heal at all. Let me go, please.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to ten. Feel the earth move and then give my heart burst again. For this is the end. I've drowned and dreamt this moment, so overdue I owe them.
Soundtrack number 2. He arrives unexpectedly, without justification. Physically, he shows signs of giving up trying to appear to be something he is not. His jet black hair is longer. No jacket and tie. He wears a black sweater and blue jeans. He knows she is alone. He goes around the house commenting on her life with detached irony, browses through the pots and pans, and sits down. He doesn't bother to explain what brought him there. There's no need. He is, as always, dissatisfied and indifferent, halfway between mystical and maniac. She offers him an aperitif and some banal excuses. Now everything is different, etc., etc. He is big and dark, with an invasive beauty. He takes a sip of the aperitif, rests his heavy arms in the black sweater on the table, speaks in a low, calm tone of voice. It's not a serious thing to live. If I knew how to suffer, I would suffer from the fact that others suffer from things that I don't suffer from. From time immemorial, I have classified them as necessary in the perfect logic of nothingness. I act randomly, only because I can't always stay still. My actions have only the rationality of disorder. Almost without paying attention, he tells her, I had thought about killing myself, but it wouldn't be a serious matter. He gets up to leave. She stops him, invites him to lunch. She is alone until the evening. She tells him, you look good with hair like that. He looks around distractedly, laughs. You really don't know how to pretend, little sister. He fucks her on the table, dressed. He never kisses her on the mouth. He likes to humiliate her. As he rebuttons his trousers, he tells her that he is with another woman, a beautiful one, of course. She doesn't answer. She's sure he'll come back. Frozen in his own cold, without the warmth of his little whore, he's dead.
About excessive positivity.
What's happening to you? You're shaking all over. Stay seated. I'll bring you something to drink. Do not move.
It's nothing. I'm just dizzy.
Here's some peach tea will do you good. Drink slowly, like this. Is it better now?
Yes, thanks. I feel much better.
Have you heard from Dr. Fasano? Did you have yourself visited?
Of course, he is the one who confirmed my pregnancy.
And what does he say?
That for the moment, it's all normal.
Do you want to lie down on the bed? I'll carry you in my arms.
Michael, then you don't understand. I will never go back to that bed again. I want to leave. You have to deal with it.
It doesn't make sense, Antonia. Let me take care of you at least for a while, without ulterior motives. I'm scared for you and for him. Don't you understand that, by doing this, you are also endangering the child?
I know, but I have to go.
Tell me why you want to leave, if you know you're in danger.
Because I can't continue to use you as a lightning rod like I have done so far. I have to take responsibility. I'm at a dead end, Michael. I can't pretend or even tell you the truth.
Which truth?
How can I explain it to you?
Do not panic. Try telling me calmly, as if you were seeing it from afar. It's important to distance yourself from negative things.
Here's the point. You are too positive to imagine negativity in others, and this is a serious limitation of yours. Because you don't see evil even where it exists. You cannot protect me from evil, simply because you do not recognize it.
I never thought about it, you know?
I know. I've known you for a long time.
Seriously, Antonia, this is a shock to me. You were right to tell me. I'm obviously not that smart, if I didn't realize it myself.
It's not a matter of smartness. You are very smart, but you don't have that kind of intuition. It is typical of honest people not to assume dishonesty in others. You perfectly understand the negativity of political and economic situations, and you know how to move to avoid the worst. But when a guy pats you on the back, you just can't imagine that he could be a bastard.
Who are you referring to?
No one in particular. There is so much evil around us, Michael, so much that you can't even imagine it. You sheltered me like a safe haven. I hid behind you. Up to a certain point you protected me, then I was overwhelmed.
You never asked me for protection, Antonia. You never told me anything at all.
I tried, but you didn't listen to me. You always had too many problems at work, and then I myself wouldn't have known where to start. There are a lot of negative people around you. Almost all the girls who frequent your house, many of your friends, myself, your brother.
Here, let's talk about my brother. What kind of person is he?
A very strange question on your part.
No, it's not strange. You know him much better than me, it's obvious. So tell me, I need to know, is my brother a bastard?
No. In Emmanuel, there is an immense potential for good and an equally immense potential for evil. He hasn't decided yet whether to be an angel or a demon.
I hope he hurry up and decide. And you? What are you attracted to? To the angel or the demon?
To both. That's why I have to leave. I'm not up to it.
What do you mean? I'm not up to it.
Don't make me say anything else. We all have tremendous gray areas. It's like uncovering a sewer and diving in headfirst. You can't even imagine what you can find in there.
Sewage, excrement, and rats, I suppose, being a sewer.
But also pearls and diamonds. That sewer is life. When you try it, you realize that everything else is fake, a kind of mediocre parish play.
I get it. It must have been terribly boring being with someone as mediocre and predictable as me.
I didn't mean that.
But you said it.
I'm sorry, Michael.
It doesn't convince me, Antonia. If things were as you say, Emmanuel would have remained here despite our marriage. He would not have run away to Tuscany with the first arrival.
Believe me, there are things about him that you don't know or even imagine.
Just to know, what role does my little brother have in that sewer? Who else is in there to keep him company? I bet there's some rat in that charming sewer dealing hard stuff.
Michael, I don't want to hear you talk about these topics. It seems to me that they make you dirty.
They make me dirty because they are dirty, Antonia.
Now I feel better. I can go. Thanks for everything.
Oh no, you won't leave here before telling me the truth. You've told me lies for years. Now I demand to know what happened in my house while I work day and night to keep things going for everyone, including you. Is that clear?
Sorry, you're right.
I know I'm right. And now speak.
What exactly do you want to know?
I want to know if my brother is a drug addict. You can only answer yes or no.
Michael, I...
Yes or no?
Yes, he was.
And you knew it, right?
I thought...
I don't give a shit what you thought. Who did it?
Michelle.
As I imagined. She is an extremely dangerous woman. It is absurd that she bears the same name as me. What do you know about her?
Almost nothing. Emmanuel never talks about her. He suffered a lot, and not just physically.
Was he in love with her?
It is difficult to distinguish love from addiction. She certainly didn't love him.
What did you want from him?
Maybe just have some fun. Your brother is a beautiful toy for a spoiled girl like her. She took him apart piece by piece. Or perhaps something worse, those people enjoy killing. They have a cult of sacrificial victims. It's part of their religion.
Which people? Which religion?
You know that Turin is full of strange sects. She's a kind of priestess of one of them, or something like that.
Crazy. That girl is the daughter of family friends, people respected by everyone, including my father and mother.
Those you respect and revere are almost all horrible people.
Why didn't you ever tell me?
I didn't want you to worry uselessly.
Uselessly?
I tried to get him out on my own, Michael, and I succeeded. He had stopped completely. He was fine.
May I know how you got him out?
In the only way possible.
Which way, Antonia?
Replacing one addiction with another.
Therapeutic fucking?
Michael, how do you express yourself? You make everything sound disgusting.
Am I the one making it sound like this?
You can't even imagine what a time that was. From what I understand, there was also a man involved. Emmanuel was completely out of his mind.
What? A man?
Don't be alarmed. Emmanuel is not a pervert. He was simply very ill. He almost immediately stopped seeing them when he was with me. He wanted to be faithful to me.
Almost immediately? Faithful?
I know. Said like that, it seems absurd, but living it was different.
But how could you fall so low, Antonia? This has nothing to do with love.
It's not like you're thinking. Please believe me, even if all appearances are against me.
Aside from disgust, you risked catching serious illnesses and transmitting them to me too. Didn't you think about it?
My tests are fine. You have nothing to fear. It was a terrible time. I almost gave my life for him. Luckily, it's over. Now Ariana will take care of it.
In what sense did you almost give your life for him? What the fuck happened behind my back, Antonia?
Enough, Michael. I don't want to talk about it anymore.
Fuck you, Antonia. This is too much. Go away. Go to hell. I feel I may no longer be accountable for my actions.
You see, it's like I told you. Not even the best of men are safe from violence. Let me pass.
Wait, come back here.
Don't try to touch me. Stay away from me. I must protect the child. I warn you, I could kill for him.
Don't worry. I have no intention of touching you. You disgust me. I suddenly realize that I can no longer bear your presence. You have been living with negativity for too long. There is no way out of this story except by erasing your character.
I thought I explained to you that you too live with negativity. You just don't recognize it. You obviously don't understand, but it's no longer important since I disgust you.
You see, there is a fundamental difference between you and me. I reject negativity with positivity, while you let it enter inside you.
It's true. Your positivity is like a shield, and for now it protects you. But as you can see, not enough. Be careful, Michael. You are surrounded by enemies whom you classify as friends, so you are in danger. You remind me of Julian.
Julian who?
The Emperor. The one the Christians call the apostate. He went to fight without wearing armor and died at the age of 32, hit in the chest by a friendly javelin.
One of these enemies disguised as friends is you, Antonia.
You're right. I should have been your armor, but instead I stabbed you in the back. Pass me the jacket, please.
Wait.
What's still there?
Soundtrack number 3. Imagine me and you, I do. I think about you day and night. It's only right to think about the girl you love. You hold her tight, so happy together. What strange sign is Aquarius? Superficial. There is no doubt, yet capable of grasping the depth in things. Imagine how the world could be, so very fun, so happy together. Hating me, loving nobody but you, for all my life. pushing it back into a marginal area that does not allow evil to act fully, destroying it with irony.
Me and you and me, no matter how they toss the dice, it had to be. The only one for me is you, and you for me, so happy together.
They are always right. Their eyes turned to the future make them distracted from the present.
For all my life, when you're with me, maybe the skies will be blue. For all my life, me and you me, no matter how they toss the
They stumble over their neighbor's pain, but they apologize. And if they can, they hold out their hand. A septic inanimate glass that protects the sick but alive creature. A few drops of disinfectant for the white mold that devours you like a cancer.
So happy together. So happy together. How is the weather? So happy together.
Pisces and Aquarius. It seems like a word pun, but instead, it has become my life.
The nurse.
Miserca tu ledes in asineptire, et quod vides perisse perditum ducas.
They are skazins, Emmanuel, not normal trimeters.
I know. That's exactly why I'm straightening them.
Don't be a fool. Come on, read them properly.
Miserca tu ledes in asineptire, et quod vides perisse perditum ducas.
Alright, now translate.
Per Catullus, stop being an asshole. And what you see dead, consider it as dead.
But how do you express yourself? Make an effort to use more formal vocabulary. I'm not saying for me, but for the teacher.
I will do it in due time. However, I can't move forward.
Why?
What is the third person plural past tense of splendere? I don't remember it anymore.
Please don't make excuses. It's splendetero. They know it even in fifth grade.
Splendetero. What a fucking language Italian is. Artificial, full of expressive limits, shit.
Yes, in fact, Dante is famous for his expressive limits.
What does Dante have to do with it? Dante is Dante.
Try making me a declaration of love in Dutch.
Ik houd van jou.
Amor che nullo amato amar perdona.
In intimate moments, I don't use Dante.
But not even Dutch, I hope.
No, not even Dutch.
What language would you like to speak?
I do not know. Perhaps Shakespeare's English.
If you don't like splendetero, you can use brillarno or rifulsero. Go on.
Bright days once shone for you, when you used to go wherever the girl took you.
The maiden.
Maiden? But who uses these words anymore?
It's poetry, Emmanuel.
Poetry. Ariana, poetry is not made of words. Poetry is flesh and blood, sometimes even lower organic fluids. Do you understand? Try to think of the
Sonne de Prudicula.
And don't tell me that Rambo isn't poetry, because I'll leave right away.
But some words have a nice sound.
For a deceased person, perhaps. For a mummy.
Listen, use whatever words you want. Just go ahead.
Wherever the girl took you, the girl loved by me as much as no one else will be loved. There were played those many love games that you wanted and she didn't refuse.
The text says, puella, not she.
For him, she was just she.
Okay, let's forget about it. What is desinas?
An exhortative subjunctive. I'll warn you, yes, I also know the
there's, you know,
paradigm and other shit like that.
Emmanuel, can you explain to me where you want to go with this attitude? You are irritating. I made a promise to your mother, you know, and I intend to keep it.
Oh shit, I've seen this movie before.
Why do you make everything seem so stupid?
Maybe because it is?
No, it's not. It's you who makes it stupid by acting stupid. You have a goal in front of you. You will take your final exam, or rather, we will take it together, and this time you will overcome it. But it depends on you. If you don't put in the work, the results won't come.
They won't come even if you put in the work.
It's not true.
In the things that matter, I've always worked hard and it didn't do any good. However, at least there is one positive thing.
What?
I'm discovering Latin. I never thought I could say it, but the literature of the last year is magnificent. Tacitus is crooked and unpredictable like a Sonic Youth song. Petronio's style has the same effect on me as certain Pixies songs.
And who would they be?
You don't know them. It's not for you. Apuleius, under his frivolous appearance, is completely rotten. I don't know what soundtrack to pair with him. Perhaps something by the Velvet Underground, or perhaps Vivaldi's Stabat Mater. Vivaldi's is pagan music disguised as sacred. Too bad I discovered it too late.
Why too late?
Because I can't tell the only person who would care to know.
Well, you're telling me.
The fact is that you don't care about music, you never listen to it, and you don't care about talking about it.
If you mean that I don't listen to your music, it's the pure truth. The musical genres you like are very far from my tastes.
But do you have any? I mean musical tastes.
I'm not a music connoisseur. I like things that you would consider too commercial.
It's not for sure. Try giving me some examples.
No, come on, you'd make fun of me.
I never make fun of people for their tastes. So, what do you like?
Do you want me to quote you a title?
Yes, the first one that comes to mind.
Wuthering Heights by Kate Bush.
That piece is brilliant of its kind. I like it too.
And then I also like 80s disco music. Not all of it, but some songs, yes.
This is already more difficult for me to digest.
I told you I would disappoint you.
No, you didn't disappoint me.
In any case, don't beat around the bush. We were translating Catullus. Go ahead.
Wretch, woe betide you. What life do you have left? Who will come to you now? Who will tell you you are beautiful? Who will you love now? Who will you tell? I'm yours. Who will you kiss? Whose lips will you bite?
Where are you going?
To the toilet.
I close the book with a sigh and look out the window. It's raining cats and dogs, and the pink oleander has withered. Contini, brushing up on Catullus for the final exam, created an additional problem for me. Even if on the whole, Emmanuel's scholastic situation is discreet. He gets along well with Greek and Latin, not to mention that the aforementioned teacher has an obvious crush on him. The grades she gives him, usually far superior to those he deserves, are a kind of reward for his blue eyes. While I wait for him to return, I go over the weeks I spent with him in my mind, trying to draw some sort of balance sheet. The first days were very difficult. Emmanuel had underestimated the effects of physical dependence, but he endured the withdrawal symptoms with great fortitude. I could hear him through his bedroom door, stifling moans into his pillow. I knocked and entered with the excuse of bringing him something: tea, orange juice, a slice of apple pie made by my mother. He sat up and thanked me. His face was often very pale, his forehead beaded with sweat, but he managed to put on an attitude. He was always very polite and formal with me. I hoped he would ask me to sit on his bed sometime, but he never did. I had started taking the pill secretly. Useless precaution. He never even gave me a kiss. My parents never knew the truth. I passed off his discomfort as a serious nervous breakdown. But they are not naive. They sense that there is something else going on. Initially, they were wary of him, but then his sweet and submissive attitude reassured them. Emmanuel is very respectful towards older people. It is one of the most beautiful sides of his character. As for psychological dependence, it's a completely different story. It's clear that he still suffers like a dog for that woman. For 2 months, I practically kept him under lock and key to prevent him from doing something stupid that he would otherwise have done for sure. I confiscated his cell phone, saying I had lost it, and I gave him a new one, with a number that she doesn't know. I had calls to that woman's number deactivated. Several times I saw him secretly approach the house telephone, even in the middle of the night. To prevent him from calling, I would unplug the phone downstairs, cutting off the line. She called him 2 or 3 times, and this alarmed me a lot, because it means that in fact, there was an important history between them. But I always made the waitress tell her that she had the wrong number. That woman has no right to torment him now that she is married to someone else. Then I began to grant him some freedom, without ever ceasing to monitor him discreetly. Sometimes, to distract him from that obsessive thought and keep him busy, I would have him cut the grass in the garden, but I had to do it towards the evening. Emmanuel has become photophobic, and direct sunlight takes his breath away like vampires. In his room, he always keeps the shutters closed, and outdoors, he wears dark glasses. I've read that it's a sign of serious mental distress. One day, in an unforgettable October twilight, as we were sitting on the porch, he told me that he would never try to hurt himself again. So far, he has kept his promise, but a more serious problem has arisen. Emmanuel is losing sight of his body. He is progressively dematerializing. He is becoming thinner and paler. He neglects himself. He has let his hair grow to his shoulders and has been losing it for some time. Even today, there are several on the desk. I would much prefer him with short hair. He would look healthier and would attract less attention from our classmates, of whom I am unmotivatedly jealous. I say unmotivatedly because Emmanuel doesn't even spare them a glance. When we leave school, we always walk together towards the bus stop, just the two of us. In those moments, I am a very envied girl. Too bad there's no reason for it. He spends his nights awake at the computer doing I don't know what. We don't have any internet connection, and even if we had, I would have had it deactivated. During the day, he studies and listens to music. He eats very little. My mother is an excellent cook and doesn't know what to invent anymore to make him eat. But after a couple of bites, he says he's already full. Sometimes he locks himself in the bathroom and vomits what little he has eaten. All this has a name, anorexia. By mutual agreement with his parents, we placed him under the care of a good analyst. He rebelled with all his strength, but I was adamant. I wonder what he's doing in the bathroom. I go to the kitchen and ask the maid to prepare a sandwich and some orange juice. Then I go back to my room and sit down to reflect. In the grip of a deep bitterness. I fear I have embarked on an undertaking beyond my strength. If I didn't love that boy with all of myself, I would have already given up. I would like to understand the root of his evil, but it is too beyond my ability. Emmanuel is burning his brief existence, trying to understand what he calls the meaning, as if everything that exists must have meaning. He lacks the ability, which we all more or less have, to stay afloat on the surface of things. Culture hurts people like Emmanuel. It was a mistake to make him study classical. I believe that his most serious problem is the fact of being beautiful, of a beauty that does not go unnoticed, and that he lives in the most self-defeating of ways, as if beauty also had a hidden meaning to be discovered at all costs. His life is a frantic hunt for a non-existent treasure. There is something in him that irresistibly attracts me, and something that inspires an unspeakable disgust in me. That letting go of his, that letting the body do its thing, so in contradiction to his presumed thirst for spirituality. The truth is that, although I love him, I have no more respect for him than I have for a child who pees on himself. Probably all this is the consequence of the morbid relationship with that woman who could almost be his mother. But if I try to imagine them together, overcoming jealousy and embarrassment, the scenes that come to my mind are ridiculous or banal. What was he attracted to? Not to her physical appearance. There are many girls younger and more beautiful than her. To pleasure? But Emmanuel's lifestyle in recent times is downright ascetic. He seems perfectly at ease in chastity. To transgression? To what? What did she do to him? By thinking about it, however, I began to ask the question in different terms. What did she do to him that I couldn't do to him too? Too bad I don't have the faintest idea what she did to him. But there is a way to know. Have him tell me. The sandwich and the juice have been ready for a while, but he still doesn't come out of the bathroom. I hear the water running. While waiting, I leaf through his notebooks. One of them, the black leather cover and a red border, opens almost by chance. The writing is dense and almost illegible. It is a strange diary, sometimes in dramatic form, sometimes as an interior monologue, sometimes as a letter, sometimes as an imaginary response, sometimes as a story in the third person, sometimes in a pseudo-poetic form. Some scenes are conceived as a sort of strange screenplay, complete with soundtrack. I don't have time to read them because the handle turns. I snap the notebook shut. He comes back with congested eyes and hair stuck to his forehead from the water he washed his face with. He cried, "I can see it." "I had you prepare something for the snack."
"Thanks, you shouldn't have bothered."
"No bother. Eat, come on." "Do you want to lie down on the bed for a while? You seem tired to me."
"Yes, I have a bad headache."
He lies down on my bed. "Can I stay here and read, or does it bother you?"
"Of course, you're in your room."
I brush his wet hair away from his forehead. He holds my hand and kisses it.
"You are very dear."
My heart is pounding. He closes his eyes.
"Catullus. Poem 72.
"What?"
"Nothing."
I remain still like this until I feel the grip of his hand loosen and I see him tilt his head to the side. He has fallen asleep. I turn off the light and tiptoe out, silently closing the door behind me.
So happy together. If I should call you up and best the time, and you say you belong to me and ease my mind, imagine how the world could be. So very fine, so happy together. Hating me, loving nobody but you for all my life. When you're with me, baby, the skies will be blue for all my life. Me and you and me, no matter how they toss the dice.
Wait.
What's still there?
My God, what's happening to us?
It happens that we are breaking up.
We can't leave each other like this. It's inhumane. I don't recognize myself anymore, Antonia. I didn't want to tell you those things. Forgive me. I don't know how they came out of my mouth.
You said them because you mean them.
No, I don't mean them at all. That's the point. It must have been terrible for you to go through all this.
Yes, it was.
I don't think you're a bad person at all. You're simply weak. Terribly weak and plagiarized. I don't want you to leave like this.
There is no point in prolonging this agony.
We're doing a lot of unnecessary harm to ourselves. Do you realize that? We have loved each other for many years. We cannot separate like two enemies. Sit down again, please. Let's both calm down. We must study a strategy to make this transition as painless as possible.
And what can we do? I don't see any solutions.
There is always a solution, Antonia. Listen, I've got an idea. We will do this. We will separate by mutual consent. I'll make up an excuse. I'll say I cheated on you with someone else, and you'll play the part of the one who doesn't want to compromise. What do you think?
So you come out fine.
Why, should I also come out badly? Laura won't say no to me. She can't wait.
Oh, Laura, coincidentally.
She seems like the most suitable person for my strategy.
Yes, of course. For your strategy.
Think about it. She is the best person. Nobody will get suspicious. Everyone knows that she is in love with me. We were together for a while before I met you, and she is also a beautiful girl. It wouldn't make sense to bet on someone else. It would be far-fetched for someone who has just returned from their honeymoon, don't you think? Instead, in this way we can make people believe in a sudden blowback. My parents will get a little pissed off, but then they'll be forced to put on a good face.
If nothing else, you'll make up for my poor second bra size, since she wears a good fifth.
Still with this small breast complex? I've told you 1,000 times that it's not a problem for me.
Huh, but by chance you focused on Laura, who incidentally is 10 years younger than me. Sorry, but how old was she when you got together?
15. I told you, it was a no-brainer. It lasted a few weeks.
15? Maybe you have some gray areas too, Michael, don't you think?
Maybe. After all, I'm a mere mortal. I'll find out quickly.
Luckily, I won't be there. I couldn't bear to even discover your gray areas.
Don't tell me you're jealous. I wouldn't believe it.
I'm not jealous. It just bothers me a little to think of you struggling with Laura's bra, that's all.
And this isn't jealousy?
No.
However, you no longer have a per second. Your breasts are increasing in volume.
It's normal, I'm pregnant.
Open your blouse a little, please. Please, I just want to see them one last time.
Are you crazy, Michael? Does this seem like the time?
There will not be another time, Antonia. We will never see each other again.
It must run in the family to be a little unbalanced. All right, I'll open it.
Your breasts are more and more beautiful. Now that they are so swollen, they look like the classic glass of champagne. Can I touch them?
Be slow, they hurt.
I do it very slowly. The bra is too tight, better undo it. So, what do you think of my strategy?
I admit it's ingenious, Michael. I especially appreciate your idea of getting together with Laura. I'm serious, but it can't work. Because in any case, your parents will find out about the baby sooner or later. What will we tell them?
That's the least of our problems. We'll keep him hidden for a while. We'll lie about his age. We'll make something up. We'll say you got him from someone else you met after me. Someone who then left you.
Sorry, why not the opposite? Couldn't I have left him?
Whatever you want, but it's not very likely. A woman who has just had a child with a man usually doesn't leave him, at least not right away. However, I will help you. I will do everything I can. I will find you a place to stay. And I will also come to visit you, if you like. Does it please you?
Yes.
Does my massage also please you?
Yes, it gives me relief.
So I'll continue. It pleases me too.
Imagine how much it will please you with Laura.
I suppose so, but for now it pleases me with you.
Maybe you should stop. It's having a strange effect on me.
Strange how?
Since the baby has been here, I feel everything as if it's amplified. I don't want to...
Lean on my shoulder. Don't think about anything. Let yourself go, like this. Have you ever considered praying the rosary?
The rosary? Are you kidding me, Michael?
Not at all. You know I'm skeptical but open to everything.
Michael, perhaps the blow was too strong for you. I think you need to recover.
Do you know what I thought?
No. Tell me.
That ultimately I should be grateful to my brother.
Even grateful?
I don't know how he did it, damn Kellerman, but he did it. I had resigned myself to not being able to have children with you, and believe me, I was sorry, even if I pretended nothing happened. But my brother's son is also a bit like my son, right?
In a certain way, yes.
Do you already know the sex?
No, it's too early.
In any case, he is a Kellerman. Or she is a Kellerman. I would love a little girl, with your eyes and hair.
He won't bear your surname, Michael.
I know, but maybe one day this can be remedied too. I already love him, seriously.
I'm really sick.
Why are you saying this now?
Because if I were healthy, I should be in love with you.
Come here, love, come back to bed. Where are you going?
I'm leaving, Michael. Had you already forgotten? My character needs to be erased from the story.
Don't ask me to see you again, Antonia. At least for a while.
I'll miss you.
I know. I'm going out now. I want to go first. Can you reknot my tie?
Certain. Double Windsor?
Yes, please. Don't leave anything here. I don't want to find anything of yours when I return.
Don't worry, I packed everything. I don't have many things, you know. Everything else is yours.
It was yours too, Antonia, I bought it for both of us.
You're wearing sexy aftershave. Where are you going? To Laura's?
You have no right to ask me this.
You are right, sorry.
We'll be in touch, Antonia. Take care of yourself.
Ma sarà la prima che incontri per strada che tu coprirai d'oro per un bacio mai dato, per un amore nuovo.
Parameters. No, doctor, it's not about that. I would say that we have overcome the risk of anorexia. I'm here for another problem, perhaps more serious.
Sure. Look, it's not easy to get out of anorexia.
Yes, I'm pretty sure. We can get him to eat, and he's regaining his strength. We discovered that he really likes panforte.
Manganelli's panforte is special.
I know, I take him there often.
Does the cigar bother you? Smoking is not allowed here, but the rules are made to be broken.
Please, go ahead. We are in your office.
Do you know what this is?
Of course, doctor. A cigar.
Not at all, miss. It's a mezzanine Botero. Do you feel how wonderful? Peppery and woody notes, typical of the best Italian Kentucky. No other tobacco releases them. What were we saying?
I was saying that it's his mental condition that worries me. I can't say anything to my parents. They would be very scared and would force me to break up with him. It would be the end for him, and I would suffer to death. I absolutely need to talk to you about this, doctor.
I listen to you.
First of all, there is the problem of photophobia. Correct me if I'm wrong. I think that's what it's called.
Exact.
Emmanuel is afraid of the sunlight. He says it suffocates him. During the day, he always has a racing heart. I can only get him out towards the evening.
He may be suffering from an ocular pathology. Have you had him examined by a specialist?
Yes, but he has nothing in his eyes. As soon as he steps out into the sunlight, he is seized by bouts of anxiety and panic.
I would rather think of agoraphobia. It has all the appearance of an obsessive compulsive disorder. Have you tried anxiolytics?
Yes, doctor, but he doesn't want to take them. He doesn't want to put chemical stuff in his body anymore. Now I'm trying valerian and other natural products, and it's going a little better. He comes to school wearing dark glasses, and I've managed to get him to go for a few walks outdoors. The Sienese countryside is so beautiful.
Without a doubt, the most beautiful in the world.
But it seems to make him uncomfortable. I don't know why.
Maybe it brings back some memories.
It's possible, doctor, but he never talks about his past. It's as if he doesn't remember it anymore.
It's a self-defense mechanism. In certain situations, it's good that it activates. You don't have to worry about it too much.
That's not all, unfortunately. Last Sunday, I thought he had definitely lost his mind.
Tell me.
We were in the car on a country road. I don't know if you are aware of that very long dirt road that passes through the Creedy.
The route of the Eroica?
Yes, exactly that. At a certain point, I hear dogs barking and see cars and vans stopped on the side of the road. I look down and see some guys in warning vests chasing a fox. It must have been a nursing female. She was mangy and very battered. There were seven of them with rifles and five dogs behind a poor, terrified animal.
So what?
I wanted to leave immediately, but he pulled the handbrake, jumped out of the car, and started chasing them, screaming like a madman.
He did well. I hate hunters. How do you shoot a defenseless animal? Don't they still have a residue of ethical sense? Even just school reminiscences, so to speak.
Or of the catechism.
No, not the catechism. The Catholic religion doesn't care about animals.
But there is St. Francis, doctor.
Just one. Anyway, continue.
As I was saying, he started chasing them.
And what did he tell them?
Stop, leave it alone, things like that. But they shot and killed her. Then he started shouting unrepeatable insults.
Repeat them to me.
Doctor, but if they are unrepeatable...
I'm the one asking you. And if I ask you, it means I need to know.
As you want. Bastards, sons of bitches, filthy shits.
Figli di puttana, luri de merde!
They put their hands on him and he opened his shirt and shouted, Shoot me if you dare, you damn bastards.
Sparate a me se ne avete il coraggio! Maledette carogne!
I was crying and yelling at him to stop, but he looked like he couldn't wait to get into a fight.
Is he a violent guy?
Not at all, doctor. And then, as I told you, he's not in very good shape either.
Does he smoke? Does he drink? Does he do drugs?
No, I keep a close watch on him. He doesn't like smoking either.
Good for him. Smoking is bad for your health. How did it end?
In the end, I ran down too. I was hoping they would leave him alone because there was a woman involved. I grabbed his arm, but he didn't stop screaming. When he turned, I jumped back in fright. His eyes were bloodshot. He was foaming at the mouth like an epileptic. He seemed possessed. And then, at a certain point...
At a certain point?
He shouted something absurd at them, doctor.
Absurd how?
He called them disciples of Satan.
Discepoli di Satana!
Strange insult. It has something literary, out of tune, out of context.
Indeed. Long story short, I managed to drag him to the car and apologize to the hunters. I hate them too, but I was afraid they would shoot us in the back.
They would never have done it, like the cowards that they are. Killing a person is not like shooting a fox, my dear young lady. There are rather serious criminal consequences.
I took the wheel, because he wasn't fit to drive, and I got away as quickly as possible. After a few kilometers, I stopped and tried to get him to come to his senses. It took me more than an hour. He was in shock. His jaw was locked. He was sweating cold. He was shaking all over, and he didn't answer my questions. His eyes were wide open, as if he were witnessing a frightening scene unfolding in his head. He wasn't with me, doctor. I don't know where he was. It was as if he identified with that fox.
Nietzsche effect, I would say.
Is it a serious thing?
Dear miss, if we were to base ourselves on Darwinian parameters, all heroes, martyrs, and great religious thinkers would be considered evolutionary waste products. That boy is, let's say, as healthy as Prince Myshkin could be.
Who?
The idiot.
It's terrible.
Who can say? Maybe he is healthier than us, but totally inadequate for the real world. To be able to afford such sensitivity, you need to have great strength of mind, which he doesn't have. Otherwise, you are like snails without shells, and the ending is obvious. You will be crushed.
Do I have to worry?
I want to be frank, Miss Benvenuti. Yes, you have to worry.
Oh my God.
I don't mean to create any illusions. It will be very difficult for that boy to become a normal adult, assuming he manages to survive. And with this, I say goodbye. It's almost lunchtime, and today my wife made me hair hunter style with juniper berries.
Please, doctor, don't send me away like this. I need you. I'm desperate. I know you don't accept new patients, but I beg you, make an exception for me. Not because you know my father, of course I'm not asking you for a personal favor.
Ah, dear Benvenuti, we played bridge together when we were young.
Yes, he told me.
We were part of the blue team, you know? Good times. Do you play bridge?
A little, as an amateur.
You can't play bridge a little. Either you play or you don't. I suggest the charitable canasta as an alternative. It seems to me that it could be right for you.
Thank you, doctor.
How is your father?
My father is fine and greets you. Doctor, I
already know everything, miss. Your dear mother talked to me about it a few days ago. She's worried too. What do you think? We had a chat in the center of Lizza. She told me that my colleague DeMartino is already taking care of him.
He's a good psychologist, but I have so much faith in you. Please.
Do you care that much about that boy?
I feel like I could kill for him, doctor.
Be careful, think about it. Kill for him, or to have him.
Both things.
No, Miss Benvenuti, it's not the same thing at all. Allow me a question. If this guy is so full of problems, why do you want to be with him at all costs?
Well, but because I...
You are in love with him, I know. But don't think this is normal. There is nothing normal about loving in that pathological way that everyone takes for granted. Therefore, of the two, maybe he is the more sane one, given that you persist in loving a boy who you yourself consider deranged.
Doctor, I really...
Forgive my frankness, miss, but I felt I had to tell you. Be on your guard, both from yourself and from him. As for the boy, bring him to me in a week for a consultation. I'll phone my colleague and we'll make an agreement.
Thank you infinitely, Doctor. But in the meantime, what can I do?
Nothing. Indeed, one thing, yes. Bring the boy this box of Ambasciata Italico Tuscans and ask him what he thinks.
It will be done, Doctor, even if I don't think that.
And try to make him give up his Endura.
Meaning what?
Take him to Manganelli more often.
Michael's Dream Part 1. No one can see me cry. No one, Father, can see me cry. So please don't turn around. I'm ashamed of these tears.
Speak, son. I'm listening.
Father, my heart has become covered with darkness, and all I see is death. My city has become a torment for me, and my father's house an incredible unhappiness. And everything I had in common with her, without her, has turned into a lacerating suffering. My eyes search for her everywhere and cannot find her, and I hate all things because they do not have her, and can no longer say to me, "Here she is, she will come," as when she was absent. I myself have become a big question mark for myself, and I ask my soul why it is so sad, why it torments me so much, and it knows nothing to answer me. Only crying is sweet to me, and I continue to be for myself a place of unhappiness, where I cannot stay, from which I cannot escape.
What happened to you?
I need your help, Father. I can't save the people I love on my own. You know that I've always been faithful to you. Mine is not blackmail, but a cry of desperation. If you don't help them, don't count on me anymore.
I've been waiting for ages to hear you say those words, Mikael.
You. Monster!
Well, I wouldn't say monster. I've probably lost a bit of my former shine, but I'm still in great shape. I see that you still haven't learned that in front of me, you have to protect your eyes with polarized lenses. Here, put on these pearls.
Why this stupid joke?
Frankly, Mikael, I don't know which of us is making fun of the other. Or do you think I missed your mediocre plagiarism of Augustine? Those glasses look good on you. Among other things, they mask the tears. The protocol does not require me to see you cry.
It was a quote, not plagiarism.
And yet, when you quote, you should always indicate the name of the author, don't you think? Anyway, I'm here. Come clean.
I don't intend to discuss it with you, Ishtar. Goodbye.
Why not? Empathy is not my strong point, but I am extremely curious and, you will admit, subtle in my analyses. Even involuntarily, I can help you untangle the tangled mess you are entangled in. What do you think of the play on words?
You are making a fool of me?
Absolutely not. What makes you think that?
I don't have to listen to you. On a dialectical level, you have always been superior to me. I am suited for action, not for words. Let your words be yes and no.
Again, a quote without the author's name. You are incorrigible.
And you are the usual joker. You enjoy playing with words. You float on the surface of the form instead of paying attention to the substance. So you don't see the tragedy.
Interesting metaphor. But pure intellect is just like that, my dear. It grasps the form and laughs at it. This is why the comic is superior to the tragic.
Stop it. Your puns are nauseating.
It depends. I know how to use my dialectical weapons in various ways. But let's get to us. I understand that you are suffering from an insignificant atom of nothingness that, who knows why, has taken up too much space in your welcoming spiritual being. I will never be able to understand the interest of you chosen spirits towards insignificant and, from all points of view, defective creatures. It occasionally happened that some of us, like Samo, felt carnal attraction to women particularly predisposed to copulation. But this had at least an aesthetic justification. Your case is different. It's more like an illness. You suffer for a creature who has nothing interesting about it. One of the infinite ordinary women who have followed one another in the history of the human species.
This insignificant atom of nothingness had been entrusted to me. I had to take care of it. I tried in total good faith. I believed I had given her everything she needed to be happy. Instead, I lost her.
And where would the problem lie?
I failed on all fronts. I worked hard for my family. But my efforts came back like a boomerang. I don't understand where I went wrong. I helped my father with the factory. But business is getting worse and worse, and he is more dull and depressed every day. My mother has closed herself off in a world of her own. My brother, that adorable child I carried in my arms, has become an antisocial liar. Hangs out with dangerous people and has taken my wife to bed.
In love with him, I guess.
Yes. He also got her pregnant.
Congratulations, Mikael. A nice strike.
I should hate him, but you know that's not like me. I didn't even realize he was in danger. He pretended well, but this very thing should have alarmed me. Pretense and lies are your weapons.
It's just that you've always been a little distracted, Mikael, and also, if I may say so, rather presumptuous. You have sinned of hybris. Not everything is under your control. You leave us too much room for action.
You're right, I'm distracted. However, my brother saved himself by going to live with a girl. She is the daughter of family friends, serious people.
In that case, we have one less problem, right?
Maybe, but it remains a personal defeat. I didn't understand that he was ill. I wasn't able to protect him, and he had to move away from me to save himself. She, on the other hand, doesn't have the strength. By moving away from me, she will lose herself. She doesn't know where she is. She doesn't know where to go. She will suffer a lot, and I won't be able to do anything for her.
Mikael, my goodness, you are so corny. It's the usual, hackneyed problem of weak souls. It's always happened. And leave her alone, right?
No, I cannot.
You see, dear, women like her are attracted to characters like me, except for the fact that I don't look like anyone. Besides, it's normal. Corrupting souls is my job, although lately I've gotten a little bored.
Bored in what sense?
I'll explain it to you later if I feel like it, but I don't think I will feel like it. Now let's come to your case. Forgive my frankness, Mikael, but you have lost clarity. Where did you think you were going with this mediocre parish play? It seems like a grotesque vaudeville. Who wrote the script? Let me meet him. I'd like to spit in his face. Dear God, he's a dog. It's a frayed text full of errors. Your role is outlined in a summary and approximate way. Moreover, you took him seriously, and this is an unforgivable gaffe for an actor. You know that you must always maintain a certain distance from the role you play. Otherwise, the character sticks to you like a second skin. An amateur interpretation. I marvel at you.
What would be the errors in the script, Iblis?
lot of them, you're spoiled for choice. For example, listen to this line again. Spending time suffering from an unhealthy relationship is a luxury that I cannot afford. Not to mention that
I can't hear you well anymore.
Truly miserable people.
The line is disturbed.
Oh, I know, it comes and goes. They are the Kuiper Belt kids. They enjoy playing pranks.
Huh? What?
Oh yes, well, we'll talk another time, Miguel. I'll call you back later.
Hello? Hello?
Soundtrack number 4. It's a crystal clear November night. There's a smell of frozen sap, of cold slime. It doesn't matter what you create. You have no thought. We've been sitting in the car for over an hour. I can't wait any longer. Pretty girl, put down your pen. Come over here, I'll show you how it's done. He's wanted this for a long time. Frederick turns to look at me. You have the skin of a girl, he tells me. The image falters. Across the room, across the street, I'm in the moment. Can't you see? I'm a party girl. I rest my temple on the headrest. I look into his eyes. He thinks it's desire, but instead it's haste. Life over a party girl. Funny girl. Make you laugh, want me bad. Now I feel so much better. His bitter smell stirs everything inside me. I bury my face in his sweater. After that, there will be nothing else. I feel like such a star. What's your name? What's your art? Nobody knows about my broken heart. Better to burn out than fade away. I get lost, I can't connect anymore. Crazy girl, see my lips, how they move. Can't you see I'm a natural? Life of a party girl, sexy girl. I
used to be so fragile, but now I'm so wild.
Dead snails on the soggy straw, no, it's wool, yellow wool. The rain takes it down the drain.
Oh, I was out so late, now I'm so tired. Do last night. Oh, I was out so late. Now I'm so tired.
The thought crumbles. I want to be yours. I want to be you. The winches of the mind pull the inert arms as in certain sick half sleeps.
Do a twirl. See my eyes. Throw a glance. Can't you see I'm a natural? Life of a party girl, funny girl, make you laugh, want me bad.
The walls of the mind expand in a short circuit of light, in an interminable fall into the void, in a sweet orgasm, in a silent scream.
I used to cry, but now I don't have the time. I used to be so fragile, but now I'm so wild. I used to cry, but now I don't have the time. I used to be so fragile, but now I'm so wild, so wild.
Dark, cold, silence.